is Filar versus the Chicago School Reform Board. Mr. McCauley.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Richard McCauley of Sidley Austin on behalf of the plaintiff, Valerie Filar. This case comes before this Court on our appeal of the District Court's granting defendant's motion for summary judgment on plaintiff's age discrimination claim and plaintiff's claim for failure to accommodate under the ADA. The board moved for summary judgment in this case on one basis, that the plaintiff had not established that she was similarly situated to the other teachers to which she compared herself with respect to her termination. The district court applied the traditional McDonnell-Douglas standard for evaluating the claims. Plaintiff responded with evidence that she was, in fact, similarly situated to the other teachers to whom she compared herself, but also pointed out that the situation was, in fact, a reduction in force case, and that the standard for a reduction in force case would not include proof that she was similarly situated.
Other than timing, what evidence is there to support the notion that Garvey's shuffling of people, such as Rydberg and Monaco, was designed to isolate Ms. Filar as sole remaining FTB in the Polish bilingual program?
If we look at the timing of it, Dr. Garvey's testimony was that he knew that he had to make a cut and that he decided Filar should go. But he promoted these two teachers despite the fact that they had not received the necessary bilingual approval and ESL approvals to occupy the positions to which they were promoted. The district court doesn't comment on that in its opinion, but there was evidence before the court that, in fact, these teachers were not properly promoted, did not have the credentials for the promotion. There's no dispute that my client, Valerie Filar, in fact, had her Type 09 standard certificate, endorsements in computer, bilingual approval, ESL approval, had all the credentials necessary for approval that the other two lacked.
Does the record tell us when Mr. Garvey learned of the drop in enrollment that he cited as the basis for eliminating?
That's one of the points that Ms. Filar made to the district court, was there was no contemporaneous record of when this decision was made. But based on Dr. Garvey's testimony at his deposition, he said that he made a decision that Ms. Filar should be the one to be cut from the program. That necessarily tells us that the decision must have been made sometime in the summer before the other two teachers were promoted, appointed to tenure-track positions. There's also evidence that cuts under the CPS, according to Mr. Heller, were made based on attendance in the first 20 days of school. That's another piece of evidence that the plaintiff has to raise this inference of discrimination, that age was a determining factor in the decision. There is no evidence in the record of when Garvey allegedly had the information necessary to make the determination that he needed to make a cut in the bilingual program. But we have his testimony that he made this decision before he elevated the other teachers. In the Chicago Public Schools, if a teacher is going to be displaced, terminated, assigned to a different job status, and they're within the FTB pool, that determination is made solely on the basis of seniority. And there's no dispute that Ms. Filar was, in addition to being senior in age, senior in terms of experience and longevity within Forman High School at the time she was terminated. So if Dr. Garvey had done nothing and waited for the school year to start within the first 20 days and assessed the attendance at the school during the first 20 days, he would have had no choice but to displace one of the other two teachers that Filar compares herself to, because she had seniority over them. The district court based its decision solely on the fact that these two teachers had been promoted and therefore Ms. Filar didn't compete with them. There is no dispute that she was the only FTB in the Polish bilingual program at the time she was displaced. The question is, what motivated Dr. Garvey's decision? And is it proper for the district court to simply rely on the fact that they did not compete on the basis of seniority and length of time service as an FTB as the sole basis for determining that they weren't similarly situated without examining any of the other evidence, without commenting on any of the other evidence that was presented by the plaintiff? In addition, if we apply the standard for a mini RIF, as this court has set out, the analysis of whether or not she was similarly situated to these other employees is not part of the prima facie case. If we apply that standard to this case, then the board did not even point to a relevant legal factor upon which the plaintiff allegedly could not meet her prima facie case. There's other evidence that supports the fact that Dr. Garvey intended to isolate Ms. Filar, and evidence that suggests that the decline in enrollment was a convenient cover for a plan to isolate her as an FTB and displace her. For example, he moved a teacher by the name of Danielska into Ms. Filar's position and moved Ms. Filar into Danielska's position because there was testimony from Mr. Heller that Dr. Garvey did not have the power to terminate Ms. Filar because she was in a state-funded position, so he moved her to a board-funded position so he could have the power to eliminate her. In addition, under the rules in effect at the time, if Dr. Garvey had displaced Ms. Filar, there was an obligation to look and see if other positions within the school were available. Knowing this, Dr. Garvey, at least Ms. Filar should be allowed to present this evidence to a jury. The district court doesn't comment on it. Dr. Garvey went outside of the school and pulled in Ms. Elaine Guzman. This is an important fact to consider, because if, absent the hiring of Ms. Guzman, in a time when Dr. Garvey allegedly knew that he was going to have to cut staff, but for the hiring of Ms. Guzman, my client was qualified to assume the position that she took, even if there was a cut in the Polish bilingual program. Ms. Filar had the qualifications to teach at any position in the Chicago Public Schools for computers. She was qualified, state certified, and endorsed. But for the hiring of Ms. Guzman, which was done in a hurry at the beginning of school, when Dr. Garvey displaced Ms. Filar, she would have naturally fallen into that open slot. But he made sure that couldn't happen. He hired Ms. Guzman, who was younger, from outside the school, sought special permission to have her approved to teach in the position even though she didn't hold the proper state certifications. None of that would have been necessary if my client had been put in the slot. She had all the necessary qualifications. But we don't have the benefit of the district court's thinking on any of this evidence, because all of these issues were glossed over. The district court opinion simply said, she's not appointed, they're appointed, disregarded how we got there. And I think, although we don't have any direct guidance from this court on this point precisely, the case that we cited, Cones versus Shalala, has some instructive language in terms of whether or not a job title or a job status is controlling. That's a question that should be presented to the jury, shouldn't be resolved on summary judgment. We ought to let the jury take a look at that and take a look at what motivated the decision to promote these other teachers. Consider the evidence of the hiring of Ms. Guzman for the open slot. Look at all of the evidence, the switching of the positions, the lack of qualifications of the teachers who were appointed, and put all that on the scale and decide, have the jury decide those questions of fact as to what motivated Dr. Garvey's decisions in this case. I think it's fair in this case to look at the question of pretext in the context of the scheme of Dr. Garvey as well. If there is a need to, the only evidence that we have that there was a need to cut someone from the bilingual program is a document that was produced late in discovery that's dated October 15, 1999. Well, Dr. Garvey had already made his decision, and Ms. Filar was already terminated at the time that document was created. There's also evidence that Dr. Garvey assumed an obligation that wasn't his in this case. And according to the testimony of Mr. Heller, the human resources specialist, these evaluations of staffing needs for the schools were made within the first 20 days. Dr. Garvey made his determination before that time had expired. The board interprets the relevant statute to say that any staffing needs, any staffing cuts in the Chicago public schools have to be made by state law by September 20th, or by 20 days into the school year. There was evidence presented that Ms. Filar was terminated after the 20th day, ultimately. She went to the Office of Culture and Language, whose responsibility it was to make these cuts, and she was told to return to the school, and Dr. Garvey terminated her again on September 27th, his stated reason being staffing needs decline in student enrollment. If we look at the dates then, by the board's interpretation of the statute, Dr. Garvey didn't have the power at that point under state law to terminate her based on enrollment. There was evidence that in the record that the 20th day of school, I believe, was the 21st of September, and Ms. Filar was displaced, according to the board, on the 27th of September, the stated reason being decline in student enrollment.
How old? This is, you know, just for my older, the oldest teacher.
I'm not certain how old the oldest teachers are in the Chicago public school system, and it raises an interesting point because the district court raised this. There was a teacher at Foreman, Mr. Lisakowski, who I believe was in his 70s at the time. But Mr. Lisakowski had been long appointed and was a tenured teacher at that point. So it's really not relevant to look at the fact that he wasn't terminated. Even if he was not appointed, he would have had seniority. He was at the school when Ms. Filar came. The fact that Dr. Garvey wasn't successful in terminating every older teacher at the school certainly is an evidence that he didn't discriminate on the basis of age against my client.
I mean, I'm just interested in it. I'll have to find out.
I know that Mr. Lisakowski was in his 70s. I'm not sure what the answer is.
I remember.
I think I had one of those, Your Honor. The second basis for the appeal is the ADA claims that were raised by the plaintiff with respect to failure to accommodate. And it seems there seems to be some disagreement. The district court found that there was no evidence or that the plaintiff was, in fact, not disabled within the meaning of the statute. And that wasn't an issue that was between the parties or that was briefed. And the administrator for administering ADA claims for Chicago Public Schools testified that, in fact, she considered my client to be disabled within the meaning of the statute, but took the position that there was absolutely no obligation on the board's behalf to evaluate the request for an accommodation because it related to commuting to work. The issue isn't commuting to work. Chicago Public Schools, as is set out in the briefs, has the power to assign cadre substitutes to any number of high schools on a day-to-day basis. What my client requested was that she be assigned to schools that were easily accessible from public transportation to accommodate her arthritic hip condition. There was no evidence. In fact, it was quite remarkable testimony from Ms. Router, the ADA administrator, that there was any interactive process here. She simply said, we don't accommodate such requests. But this request is very similar. The request made by my client is very similar to a teacher requesting a parking space close to the door to accommodate an arthritic hip. Just so happens that my client doesn't have the means to own a car, and she had to take public transportation. She asked that she simply be put at schools, not one school as argued by the board or inferred by the board, simply put at schools where the bus stop was close to the door and didn't have any hills between it. And she listed in her request a number of such schools. Ms. Router's testimony was she simply disregarded the request because there was no obligation to help someone get to school. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time.
Thank you, Mr. McCauley. Ms. Wu?
Good morning. My name is Jennifer Wu. I represent the Chicago Board of Education. There are several points that Mr. McCauley makes about the shuffling that Dr. Garvey made, and Judge Rovner is correct. The only thing here is the timing. There is no evidence that Dr. Garvey made any of these moves because of any of the teachers' ages or the plaintiff's age.
You know, even, tell me, where are we if we think that the district court erred in insisting that Ms. Fular show that similarly situated employees were treated more?
We're still in the same place because plaintiff still needs to show a pretext in this case. The reasons given by the board for Ms. Fular's displacement to the cadre were essentially twofold. Dr. Garvey stated that the reason why he had to lose one teacher from the Polish bilingual program was because there was a decline in the enrollment in that program. He made a judgment call. He decided that Ms. Fylar was her absence would least hurt the program. That is something that is within his discretion and within his knowledge as the instructional leader of the high school. His recommendation to displace Ms. Fylar had to be approved by the Human Resources Department of the board. Stephen Heller looked at Ms. Fylar's certification, looked at the certifications and seniority of the other teachers in the school to determine if there were any open positions within Foreman that she could occupy. There were none. That she was not only, she would have to have, the board would have had to had a position open in which she was senior to the individual, that is, an FTB that had fewer years than her, and that she was also certified for the position that was open. There were none, and that is why Ms. Fylar was displaced to the cadre.
The other two did not have certification, did they, that she had?
Actually, they each had Type 9s. Mr. Monaco had a Type 9 he received on March 3, 1999. Dr. Garvey appointed him as a tenured teacher on July 23, 1999, and that was effective August 19, 1999. So Mr. Monaco's appointment as a tenured teacher was, in fact, correct. As counsel had pointed out, as of August 15, 1999, there was a requirement that the teachers be certified as a Type 9 teacher.
Now, even if the similarly situated prong of the prima facie case applies here, given that Dr. Garvey was shuffling a number of teachers into different positions in the weeks surrounding his decision to eliminate Ms. Fylar's position, shouldn't we at least look at Rydberg and Monaco, who had also been FTB, and treat them as similarly situated to Ms. Fylar?
Well, this court certainly could do that, but we still get to the question of pretext. Certainly, there is no evidence in the record that shows that any of the decisions made by Dr. Garvey, the appointment of Monaco, the appointment of Rydberg, or the displacement of Fylar was related to Ms. Fylar's age. The evidence in the record shows otherwise. There's evidence in the record that states that Dr. Garvey, who was a man in his 60s, hired Ms. Fylar when she was 62. There's also evidence that Dr. Garvey retained older teachers, such as Mr. Lysakowski, who was 72, I believe, at the time in September 1999.
He was tenured, wasn't he? So he had to keep him.
He could keep him. There is a procedure for removing tenured teachers.
Tenured
teachers can be removed for cause. So right. Certainly if there was cause for Dr. Garvey to do that, he could have done that. But there is no evidence that Dr. Garvey was motivated by age at all.
You know, Ms. Fylar says that after Dr. Garvey informed her that she was being displaced, she reported to OCL. And they told her that her position was not, in fact, being eliminated, and that she should return to Foreman. Is that true? And if it is, what explains the
I don't think the record is clear as to why that there is two letters in the record. There is one displacement letter dated September 17th, and then one that is also dated September 27th. Both letters state that she was going to be displaced on September 27th that would be the effective date. Ms. Filer also grieved this with the union, and the union, they had a hearing, and it was determined that she was rightfully displaced in that instance. But I don't believe the record is on why there are two letters. If you notice on the September 27th letter, there is an indication at the bottom of the letter that she was to report to the cadre. There is no indication on the first letter where she should report. Another instance in the record that shows that Dr. Garvey was not motivated by age, he appointed Ms. Danielska in 1997. At the time, she was 58 years old. 7 out of the 13 teachers identified by plaintiff that were in the Polish bilingual program were over the age of 40. So there is a plethora of evidence in the record that shows that age did not matter to Dr. Garvey. There just simply is no evidence of pretext, and because of that, the district court did not err in granting the board's motion for summary judgment. If I may move on to the failure to accommodate, the accommodation claim raised by the plaintiff also fails. The accommodations are directed towards enabling an employee to perform the essential functions of a job. Commuting to work is not an essential function of the job. The board is obligated and realizes that it has a duty to eliminate barriers within the workplace. Again, commuting to and from work is not a barrier that is within the workplace. It is a barrier that is outside the workplace that the board should not be legally obligated under the ADA to accommodate. As to Mr. McCauley's suggestion that the parking spot is an accommodation that is similar to the one that Ms. Filer wanted. Ms. Filer wanted to be assigned to a school that was close to public transportation. The board cannot unilaterally assign a teacher to a school. That is within the discretion of the principal. Therefore, the board could not just give her a certain school to be assigned to. Because of that, the difference between Ms. Filer's claim or her request in asking for a school that's closer to public transportation is different from having a parking spot that is already at the duty station. Certainly, there is no way for the board to move the school closer to public transportation. That would be almost physically impossible unless we knew that we could build a school near public transportation. And that would also go into a question of hardship.
Well, couldn't the principal, in his discretion or her discretion, at least reflect it upon the request? Well, there's no evidence that ever occurred.
Right. There's no evidence of that, Your Honor. But the letter that Ms. Rauter, the ADA administrator, sent to Ms. Filer when she denied the request was that she could contact the principals because it was within the principal's discretion to hire cadres. The board could not direct that, and that direction is in the school code. The board simply cannot direct a principal to hire a teacher.
It's not within the board's province to even raise that for consideration by a principal. I understand that the direction can't be mandated, but the board can't call upon or reflect upon such a request.
I suppose that it could make suggestions, but what is happening here is then we get into the principal possibly thinking this is a directive from the board, and that is not within the board's powers to do. Plaintiff admitted that she was able to perform all of her work duties when she was at the school. She did not need an accommodation for that. Accordingly, the board did not have a legal obligation to accommodate her as to her commute to work. If this court has no other questions, the board requests that this court affirm the district court's decision. Thank you,
Ms. Ruth. McCauley, you have a minute.
Very briefly, Your Honors. I simply point out that I think what counsel is saying, essentially, in the argument is there's no direct evidence that Dr. Garvey discriminated on the basis of age. That point's conceded. We concede that point. But the district court said there was no evidence of pretext. There was a lot of evidence of pretext here. And the inferences that were to be drawn from that evidence should have been drawn in the favor of the plaintiff, and a jury should be allowed to decide whether or not those inferences give rise to pretext. The fact, just briefly, the fact that these appointment, that the displacement of Ms. Filar was approved by Mr. Heller is really irrelevant. Mr. Heller looked at the records as of the time that she was displaced, Ms. Filar. At that point, Guzman had been slotted into a position that my client would have been qualified for. And also, the appointments had gone through. That wasn't something that Mr. Heller was looking at. He looked at September 27th, is it proper to displace Ms. Filar based on the positions in the school? Well, with Guzman in place, Dr. Garvey had done a good job of covering his bases. I think we addressed the point of the older teachers that Mr. Lisakowski was tenured, and you don't have to – I'm sorry.
You're making a concluding thought. I just wanted to bring that to your attention.
Okay. It just briefly on the ADA point, you've got to try. You've got to do something. You can see that the person is disabled. My client didn't ask to be assigned to a particular school, gave a list of schools and said, and any others that might be close to public transportation. And I think the spirit of this court's case law is you've got to try. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cawley. Thank you, Ms. Wu. The case is taken under advisement. Court will proceed.